Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, before you plunge into that public pool or hot tub, what exactly is floating around in there? And how safe is the water? We'll look at pool water safety with an expert from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
But first, if the eyes are the windows to the soul, then what is the mouth? The answer, though not as romantic, makes sense when you think about it. What happens in the mouth affects the whole human body. Oral health is an indicator of overall health, and brushing your teeth is just the tip of the iceberg.
From the presence of bacteria to saliva flow and even gum disease, conditions in the mouth can impact other areas. Joining us to explain the connection between oral health and overall health is Dr. Thomas Salinas. Dr. Salinas is a professor of dentistry at the Mayo Clinic, where he's associated with the Departments of Dental Specialties and the Cleft and Craniofacial Clinic. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Salinas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm eager to talk with you today on the topic.
So how does the health of your mouth, teeth, and gums affect your general health?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's contemporary as far as what we know about patients' oral health. I think more people are seeing the dentists, their own dentist rather, now more so than ever. I think popularized by much in the way of health in the news in this day and age allows us to explore certainly health from a health perspective, but also from an elective perspective and general health. People have become more attuned to their bodies. In the last three decades, I think we've seen just a total realization of not just oral health, but health in general. So with this respect, there's enough information lately on some relationships. We're not clear on those relationships, but many of the relationships between the oral cavity and the rest of the body has come to light.
In terms of those relationships, I'll be frank, I'll tell a personal story. I have a dental hygienist who used to work with a dentist who specialized in periodontal disease. And for a very long time, she's been saying, you know, plaque in the teeth and the mouth, that really relates to heart disease and other things. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, Donna, you're just going on. You're just saying crazy stuff. But indeed, we're finding out that that's true. How was that link established? And what exactly are we talking about? What is the connection?
I think a lot of our specialty areas have becoming more aware of making some sort of a connection. The biggest connection that we're seeing is certain systemic diseases such as diabetes, asthma, rheumatoid arthritis seem to have in some way tooth loss patterns associated with them. The bigger question in our mind is there a relationship between them? And if so, is it causal? In other words, can we say that there's a cause and effect type relationship? That's what's unclear. The bigger question is, how does this relate to the overall health of everyone? This is something that we're beginning to see in our baby boomer population. We're seeing, as everyone knows, a large increase in the amount of folks that were born post-World War II and are seeking dental care. Those are the 50-plus generation now. And we're seeing a lot of these relationships between some systemic disease and oral health. What isn't clear is not all the time is it a causal relationship. Many of these patients have sort of a genetic makeup that makes them more susceptible to disease. So in that regard, it isn't necessarily causal. There is a casual relationship between these two entities, disease processes of the body, and in some way markers in the oral cavity, in the mouth, gum disease, cavities, this sort of thing, gives us an idea if, in fact, there is some sort of relationship. And there is, and we've seen that correlation. What we don't understand is how it's related to it is a cause and effect. And I think that'll become more interesting as time goes by, where we have more of this data from our populations, more of this data that shows us that, you know, it may be just a coincidental relationship, or in some cases, in fact, it is indeed causal.
When we talk about cause and effect, I wonder if when they're studying this, are they looking at the population and how they care for their bodies? So if you are not good at dental hygiene and haven't been for many years, it probably wouldn't be a surprising conclusion that maybe you've neglected other areas of your health. Maybe you don't exercise. Maybe you eat a lot of fried food. And therefore, I wonder if you were just isolating the mouth and you found a lot of problems in a certain population, it seems there might be a connection with neglecting other parts of your health as well. Do they talk about that when studying this?
You know, there is some correlation made. I think the biggest part of it is determining so much as what we call risk factors. Patients that may have regular dental hygiene, regular screening. This is the sort of thing that is important in general, not just for oral health, but the fact that we can isolate certain disease processes. As you mentioned in the introduction, the mouth is kind of a gateway to the rest of the body. And by that, we're able to identify patterns that we see in the mouth. Certain disease processes we can identify in the mouth, and we can also see it as part of their systemic disease. Lupus and other diseases like that have that presentation when patients show up for cleanings or even just a routine dental exam. So it is interesting to look at those correlations and how they relate to overall systemic health. As far as identifying patients that are good at taking care of their oral cavity, you're right. I mean, there are certain people that have risk-type behaviors and others that may be a little bit better about their oral health and their oral health awareness. So I think that that definitely demarcates those that that see a dentist regularly. That's the number one question we ask at the clinic. Are you seeing a dentist regularly? And if you are, you know, that really negates a lot of disease processes from the start. So there's value in oral health. Linking it to other systemic conditions, we're cautious in doing. We are aware that there is some association, but we're trying to isolate and minimize the patient's risk as they see us for follow-up.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're talking to the dentist, Dr. Salinas, about health issues and how there is more and more of a connection between your oral health and your overall health. And I wanted to just get in your opinion on the connection between heart disease, stroke, diabetes with inflammation. So much is being studied now about inflammation in our bodies. What does that have to do with inflammation in our mouth?
Inflammation in the mouth certainly is by itself a risk factor for some disease processes. We know the fact that there is a correlation. One of them you mentioned, coronary artery disease. There is a tooth loss pattern associated with patients that are afflicted with coronary artery disease. And while we don't understand the interplay and the interplay between both entities, we do know that there is an association. Low levels of inflammation create lots of products the body produces in an effect to control it. And sometimes as a result of that, that leads to other types of disease processes. Chronic inflammation has been implicated with cancer in some forms, but we are aware that low levels of chronic inflammation certainly over time can create problems for the body in handling it. Some of us have an immune system that's very complex and is maybe perhaps at a disadvantage, and some of us have the genetic makeup to where it's able to handle chronic disease processes. So again, it's not very clear on the association between the two entities. What we want to do is minimize the amount of inflammation present certainly in the oral cavity and elsewhere in the body. And if we can do that and one affects the other in some way, then certainly that's a bonus. But having low levels of inflammation long term is something that I think all of us in healthcare are beginning to recognize that it's not necessarily a good thing. And we're trying to minimize that, minimize the patient's risk for disease.
I know people probably don't pay attention to the condition of dry mouth unless they're going to do something like public speaking, in which all of a sudden they're nervous and they get dry mouth. But what about the role of saliva in the mouth? Because that can be an issue for oral health. Are there certain medications that reduce saliva flow and compromise the natural ecology in the mouth?
Certainly so. Dry mouth is something that's been recognized for decades, in dentistry at least, causing a problem. Saliva has a specific role in the mouth. It keeps the teeth free of bacteria. There are chemicals your body puts in saliva to keep the teeth free from dental caries, cavities as we know it, and to some level gum disease as well. So saliva has a protective effect in the oral cavity. It lubricates the lining and the skin of the mouth, and in some cases it certainly has an antimicrobial factor as well. In addition, it also helps digest sugary foods. So saliva has a very protectant effect on the mouth. As far as medications that contribute to this problem, we have a number out there. I mean, we see the evening news and how many commercials that are dedicated to just the new drug that's available. And many of these drugs, particularly drugs that control high blood pressure, drugs that control levels of depression and similar type drugs, have an effect indirectly in the mouth. It decreases the quantity of saliva as well. And having a dry mouth can definitely affect your oral health when it comes to gum disease and developing dental cavities and this sort of thing. So there's a large number of medications, too numerous to mention for our purposes today, but many of these drugs do have an effect of dry mouth, and it can cause some common oral conditions we see clinically.
There are more and more products in general on the market. I wonder if you could just address some of the newer things, whitening products. There are toothpaste and mouthwashes that now claim to kill harmful bacteria in the mouth. And it's hard to separate out what's healthy, what's not, what we should avoid in these products. Do you have any guidelines for us?
Well, I would say patients are certainly aware of the ability to whiten their teeth. This has become more popular since one of our colleagues talked about it in the 80s. And peroxide is the main way that this is done in a dental office or even as a take-home product. The levels of peroxide in these products is done on a fairly long-term basis, over an hour at least. Some of the mouthwashes and products as toothpastes are available with whitening agents in them, but in a general sense, most of these products that are used as toothpastes and mouthwashes are ineffective for a number of reasons. The main reason is that they just don't stay in contact with the tooth long enough to make a difference. Antimicrobial effects from peroxide are very good, on the other hand. Peroxide definitely kills bacteria. So in that regard, it does have an effect on reducing the bacterial count in the mouth. As far as whitening goes, I think we need to revisit that. These are fairly newer products, and we don't have enough long-term information to say for sure if they're largely effective, just based on their contact in the oral cavity and the amount of time that they're in contact for.
I'm asking you this question, and I am filled with hope, anticipating your answer. How much research is being done on reducing pain when visiting the dentist? Is that a priority for the people that do these kinds of studies?
Well, I think pain control in decades past has been looked at in a lot of ways for patients. There are three universal fears. Number one, fear of pain, certainly, fear of the unknown, and fear of not being in control. And as much research that's been done over the last three decades for sure, pain control has been improved. Types of anesthetics that we have available are longer acting. We've become more aware of better ways of administering anesthetics. Conscious sedation is being used in some dental offices, and in some cases it's being used fairly routine with regard to nitrous oxide, which is, everyone knows it as laughing gas. But these are effective ways in reducing anxiety. Anxiety is actually a part of pain control as well. And if we can allay patients' fears of these three universal fears that most patients have when they visit the dentist, then I think we've come a long way. As far as research, there are areas that probably focus more on research with pain control in comparison to typically years past. I would say our clinic does a fair amount with anesthesiology. Anesthesia folks here are very good at looking at conscious sedation and what patients remember after a procedure if they're given conscious sedation. So I think we've come a long way in comparison to years past. Again, the materials and the methods we're using are very different now. Patients are being treated in a safe manner. And I think that that's a big part of looking forward, at least from a patient's perspective in visiting the dentist.
Dr. Salinas, we really literally only have a couple of seconds left, but I wanted to ask you what your general recommendation is for maintaining good oral hygiene, including how often should we be seen by a dentist?
Well, the recommendations from the ADA for healthy adults would indicate that average dental patient would be seen every 6 months by their dentist for a screening examination, radiographic exam included. Routine radiographs with digital radiography has improved what we do quite a lot. Also, regular prophylaxis or dental cleanings, as we call it, will help identify areas that are suspect. We can screen for disease on a regular basis, and that allows us to predict the oral health certainly a lot better than we can without this screening device.
Thank you so much for joining us on Take Care. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Thomas Salinas is a professor of dentistry at the Mayo Clinic. For more information on Dr. Salinas and oral health, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. Podcasts of our show are available on iTunes and the WRVO website.
Coming up, what's swimming around in the water you're swimming in? Find out how to avoid recreational waterborne illness. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.